You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lisette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio. Welcome to 90 Day Soulmate with Lisette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about inherited generational trauma, understanding, recognizing, and reversing the impact. Number one, this is how we got interested in looking at this. We were watching a video by a gentleman by the name of Mark Wolin, who seems to be a very good speaker, very knowledgeable on the subject of passed on inherited generational traits or inherited generational trauma. So Mark is a leading expert in the field of inherited family trauma. He has authored books such as It Didn't Start With You, How Inherited Family Trauma Shapes Who We Are and How to End the Cycle. So we'll be looking at others as well. So let's see what epigenetic trauma is or inherited trauma. The idea that trauma can be passed down from one generation to the next through epigenetic changes. Again, changes to the coding of the DNA or the genes that are passed on, and that can trauma be passed on in that coding. The mechanism is trauma that is experienced by parents or grandparents can alter the gene expression in the descendants without changing the actual DNA sequence, but only changing the expression of what's included in the DNA. It's almost like getting an option on a car, I guess. You get the same car, but you've got the option for the tinted windows.
Mm-hmm.
It can manifest itself as unexplained fears, anxieties, or behavioral patterns in descendants. So that's the definition of it. Let's take a look further at the technique of Mark Wolin and his approach to treatment. Family constellation therapy. First, identifying and addressing hidden dynamics within a family that contribute to inherited trauma. The core language approach, analyzing specific words and phrases that reveal the roots of inherited trauma. So core language could be the words you talk to yourself about, mm-hmm. that are in your head,
yeah.
or when you talk to others, what you share.
And also, this is the key point when you try to understand your own core language, because you find so many beliefs that you have.
So listen to yourself. Listen mm-hmm. to your self-talk, right? Your yeah. self-talk, your yeah. what you think. When you say, who am I? And you start thinking about your challenges and things, you start looking at the words you're using to describe yourself, and you go, oh, maybe there's something in there that yeah. Is a word that is associated with trauma,
mm-hmm.
but I think sometimes we don't recognize it unless we're introduced to what those words are and what those concepts are.
And maybe it can be in different levels. So there's no, we believe drama is something huge. Maybe you have a little trauma that define who you are right now.
That can make sense. Let's go into the steps of the therapy. First, you need to identify, right? You need the identification. Recognize the patterns and symptoms that indicate inherited trauma. The expression, allowing suppressed feelings and experiences to surface, which in constellation therapy, there's a lot of acting out of these feelings and these suppressed feelings. Reconnection, rebuilding relationships and resolving unfinished family business. We'll talk about that in a second. Healing, integrating the newfound understanding to break the cycle of trauma. In family therapy, the rebuilding of relationships may not actually be with that person, with that family member, with that ancestor that has had or caused the trauma. Because in family constellation therapy, you have representatives. You have people who represent. So a volunteer will come out and represent your grandmother. Another volunteer will represent
your brother, yes. your daughter, whatever. Yeah.
But the idea is to have figures that we associate with those personalities and allow the spirit of the emotion, mm-hmm. and that's how I'll explain it, the spirit of the emotion to come through those people and have an interplay to understand how come they experienced the trauma, to connect with them and in a way understand mm-hmm. and maybe even forgive or at least acknowledge the trauma.
Yeah.
Because once you look at that scary thing, you may be able to address it. So this is where family constellation therapy is a little bit, is the word esoteric? It's a little spiritual,
mm-hmm.
and it moves a little bit away from what you would expect in traditional psychology, but it does offer a way to address things that may not be addressable otherwise.
Yeah, maybe it's more easy to like that, acting and be a sponsor for somebody different versus you sitting in the couch and in the psychology room.
How do you feel like that?
And this is the question. So it's a methodology.
Yeah. It is. It's a methodology. And for some people, it's a very helpful mm-hmm. methodology. What's next? You need to have awareness, understanding that trauma can be inherited and recognize its signs in oneself. Empowerment is realizing that inherited trauma can be addressed and healed through therapy. So a lot of this is preconception, that if you preconceive that you can recognize trauma and that it can be addressed in therapy, those are the first two steps that you need to actually have a behavioral change,
mm-hmm.
right? Because if you don't believe therapy is going to help, it's not going to help.
Nothing, you will have nothing.
So it's almost like constellation therapy. If you really believe in it, there's a higher likelihood that it helps you than if you're like, I don't believe in it, but I'm going to go to it and see what happens. Sure.
Yes. I see people like that.
It's like, I'm going to go on this date even though I'm not interested in this person.
Mm-hmm. So what are you doing?
Why are you doing it? What else do we have here? Here's some practical steps that Mark Wolin has at the end. Engaging in the therapies such as constellation and core language approach to uncover and resolve hidden family traumas may be useful. It can give you hope and healing. Breaking the cycle of inherited trauma can lead to profound personal and familial healing. Yeah, you're like healing of the family
mm-hmm.
through this. What do you call it? Where it's like your straw man of you're creating characters within your family. You're trying to get your family to heal, even though you might be the only survivor. Because maybe it is grandparents, and maybe mm-hmm. it's parents, and maybe they've all passed. And now you feel that you're disconnected from resolving these issues.
Yeah.
And this is a way family constellation therapy is to, quote, connect to the emotional spirits that are inherent in those issues while you have other people, volunteers, play the roles and try to embody that emotion and have that connection so you can express yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And part of it is, I think, the love and care and oneness of the group when they're trying to help somebody. I think it does offer a bit of consolation.
And not just like that. I hear that some people, the voluntary people, sometimes learn more versus the people is in the therapy. You know what I mean? So because they play one role and they discover in the middle of the disease, there's some feelings, some trauma. And healing too. So it's not just you be voluntary, you can also heal.
Well, let's just pretend there's 16 common traumas in mm-hmm. families. I'm making up this for the moment. But say there's commonalities between traumas in different families.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, if you are taking part in this event, it may help you heal to see this type of interaction from a different perspective.
Yeah. And also, if you can see this in your office when somebody, I remember in the past when I work in office with regular boss, and some people feel so angry with the boss, and I don't feel this angry with the boss. So I say, what is wrong? And then is some kind of conflict people have with this person versus others. So that is therapy in office.
Personalities that trigger right?
Yeah.
Trigger these responses, and you're like, yeah. What's the problem? I don't get it. And then you learn later that there was some other element that caused this trigger, which caused this response and this not getting along with somebody else.
If you don't be aware and observe the theater, you know, you maybe leave this kind of trauma with your boss forever. Yeah.
So let's talk about some of the traditional psychologists out there who have looked at epigenetic causes and relationships in trauma, or at least passed on traits. So the number one we have here is the person who actually coined the expression of epigenetics, and that is Conrad Waddington, who was around from 1905 to 1975. He actually brought up the term epigenetics in 1940 and developed the concept of the epigenetic landscape, which illustrates how genes interact with their environments to produce a phenotype being the traits and the personality and behaviors of the person.
Mm-hmm.
Let's go on with that. So an example study was his famous epigenetic landscape model, which visualizes how different cell fates arise during development influenced by both genetic and environmental factors. This concept laid the groundwork for understanding how genes could be regulated by mechanisms other than changes in DNA sequence. So not changing the sequence of the DNA, but how can the genescape or landscape be changed by these other chemicals that are impacting the passage of information that's encoded within the DNA without actually changing the DNA.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So modifications, some things that influence and preventable, changeable genetic factors that come up in his model would be epigenetic modifications such as DNA methylization or methylation, histone modification. These things can be influenced by lifestyle factors, including diet, stress management, and exposure to environmental toxins. Examples: adequate nutrition and avoiding exposure to harmful chemicals can positively affect gene expression. So in this case, how can the actual expression of genes be changed by diet and lifestyle? Now we can also look at mutation and genetic variations, which are partially preventable, which means that you may not be able to prevent inherited genetic mutations. You may be able to minimize somatic mutations, ones that occur after conception. They can be minimized by avoiding too much UV, smoking, chemicals, tobacco smoke, you know, foreign substances, that these can help minimize genetic changes. Now, a lot of these are physical, they're not mental, they're not traumatic, but they can also be.
Yeah.
Right? By reducing, say, we were talking about diet before, by not having the right diet, it can create stress because you don't have enough serotonin. Mm-hmm. And so now you're more anxious, and now you're more anxious to trigger something, and now you have this epigenetic change. So all these things tie together.
But I told you about the cancer. So right now it's looking for the way they no use chemotherapy because it impacts so much, and try to go to the way they do the gene manipulation.
Gene manipulation.
So it can be an option.
Let's talk about a couple of other things. Maternal diet is very influential in preventing epigenetic changes that are bad. So ensuring a balanced and nutrient-rich diet during pregnancy can positively influence fetal development and the epigenetic landscape of the embryo. Consuming adequate folic acid, vitamins, and minerals during pregnancy to support healthy fetal development. And if I remember this correctly, diet before pregnancy can help build your own DNA sequence, strengthen your own constitution, where it minimizes bad epigenetic results, right? So you minimize, and then living yourself in if you live in a stress-free environment, say your parents had issues that were passed down to you, but by you trying to live a stress-free life, you might reduce the expression of those genes and therefore turn that off where it's not passed on to your child.
Your child, yeah.
When we come back, we're going to talk more about this, the pioneers of epigenetic or family gene transferred traits that may be passed to children on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date, and then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Days Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Days Solutions. Welcome back to 90 Days Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about epigenetic influences on trauma, how we inherit trauma from our ancestors, and how we can pass it on to our descendants.
Mm-hmm.
I want to talk a little bit about epigenetics again and how it works. Just a real brief overview. We'll get into this chemistry and stuff in detail maybe on a later show, but I just want to bring up the complications, or at least just some of the explanations of what's going on. So the four things in epigenetics right now: DNA methylation, which is the addition of a methyl group to DNA, which leads to gene silencing, turning off a gene or the expression. Histone modification, which changes to the histone proteins affecting chromatin structure and gene expression. Non-coding RNA, it regulates gene expression at transcriptional and post-transcriptional levels. And then chromatin remodeling modifies chromatin architecture to control gene expression. All this stuff is going on in our body.
Wow.
And we don't even know how to talk about it.
Yeah, it's a lot.
But this is all these things that are affecting our traits,
mm-hmm.
and how we pass them on or don't pass them on, or if they're expressed or not expressed.
Yeah.
And what influences them? And I'm just going to say two things. The amount of stress and trauma in our life, you know, all the environmental factors, and then basically ourselves. Like, how do we take care of ourselves?
Mm-hmm.
Physically, nutritionally, exercise, sleep. So there's the stuff we can't really handle, which is environment and situations that we're in and we are faced with every day. And then number two, how do we take care of ourselves?
Yeah.
There's a little more than that, and we'll actually follow up at the end of the show with a list of what we can do to be best prepared to deal with these things.
Yeah.
But that's it. So that's how epigenetics works. Let's talk about examples. Passed on traits, and also skipping generations of gene expression, which is kind of that you can have a passed on trait that you get and receive. Could mm-hmm. it be trauma? Could it be, you know, how well your hair grows? You know, it can be one of these things where it's a gene turned on or not turned on.
It's like the lottery, you know, because you have many, many brothers and sisters and you see how it impacts in different way.
And although you're
the same parents,
you're similar.
Yeah.
You're similar, but you look nothing the same.
Yeah.
Just like the mice that are in the experiments have 99% the same DNA we do, and they don't look like us. Mm. Most of them.
Yeah.
Maybe once in a while one looks like me, but yeah. So the skipping generations of gene expression as well means that you could have the tendency for this gene to be easily expressed if these things happen in your life. Poor nutrition, trauma, environmental factors, these happen. And in your family, that could be a gene that's expressed, where someone else has a family where it's really been blocked mm-hmm. by other changes, epigenetic changes in their family's DNA, should I say, in the expression of their genes. And therefore, even though it's much harder to express that, or it's not possible to.
Yeah.
So sometimes these are tendencies for something to be able to be expressed. And although you may not have it expressed in your life, maybe your child does. So skipping generation
yeah.
of
yeah.
some trait. So that's one of the examples. Here are passed on traits. For example, a gouty mice. The maternal diets affect offspring coat color and disease susceptibility. That is both prior to conception and after conception. And then human metabolic disorders, poor parental nutrition leads to metabolic disorders in offspring, and again, whether or not that is pre or post conception, that it can happen in both areas. That is interesting. What else do we have here? Skipping generations of gene expression. Grandparent diet and disease. Grandparents' dietary habits influence health and disease susceptibility of grandchildren. So you may do everything you can in your power to eat well, treat yourself well, to give your children the best opportunity to have the best life, and yet you are also, I'll use the word victim, of your parents and ancestors. Now, you may do everything possible, but it may skip you as impacting you, and you might be like, well, I'm so healthy, why is my child not as healthy?
Yeah.
Because of skipping generation. That's not fair. Let's look at some laboratory research and reports. We're going to look at mice and cherry blossom shock experiment, as well as mice and separated pups. A little mouse is called a pup, I guess. It's a pup. Not puppies. We don't separate puppies and mice. We have mice and their pups. They're little babies. So let's look at those experiments.
Go ahead. So what happened with the cherry blossoms?
Well, you tell me, because I think you were the one telling me about that this morning. Yeah, go ahead.
That is a nice experiment. So is the lab and when half a many mice.
Right.
And then they have a smell, the cherry blossom.
The scent of a cherry blossom. Yeah.
And then half a, in the same time, half a electrical shock. So that is doing to program the mice. What happened next?
So what happens is now the mice have been getting the shock and smelling cherry blossom, shock and cherry blossoms. Now the mice reproduce and have offspring. And mice have offspring pretty quickly. They, without training the baby mice, they have the baby mice experience cherry blossom smell, and they immediately dislike it.
Yeah. And have some kind of the chemical body for...
So the area in their brain that experiences smells is actually bigger, and they can experience cherry blossom smell at a much lower level because it's dangerous. Their brain physically has become bigger in this scent receiving area, and now they can smell cherry blossom smell at a further distance, and they shudder and they try to avoid it. So the physical impact on the parent created a automatic response and a physical, so a physical and a psychological response.
Yeah, but not just from, stop there, you know,
and then get passed on.
They pass to the next generation. So also do mixing with different mice. They don't have the same experience, but the grandchild has the same scare for the smell.
So can we do that with cologne and perfume at work?
Maybe it's happened with you because you don't like cologne.
I just don't like anybody with any smells.
We have to talk with your grandmama and figure out what happened.
I want a workplace and a life without smells, other than good food. Good food, it can be anywhere. Like, if you smell like good food, that's okay. But if you smell like perfume, no.
This is good when I cook and I smell, I got it now.
Basil, is that basil I smell on you? Or oregano?
Or barbecue.
Barbecue sauce.
There you go.
I'm sorry, we're getting off subject here. But the idea is smells can create behavior. And if the smell is associated with something bad. And think about human behavior. We have things that disgust us, right? We smell it and we get disgusted. And we have a high sensitivity to those smells, like the smell of throw up or maybe poop or disease. Different things that we're really hypersensitive to have been associated with maybe disease or sickness or harm. So now these smells are associated with that. We are very quick to smell that.
And also the point for me was surprised this experiment is not just happened with the second, the third, and almost four generation, and the information coming through based upon that you cross the mice with different and mice that don't have the experience. So
there's a great show that I watched years ago. It was about this guy who raised turkeys from eggs. And he walked with them and they would do things. But he started, because he was able to travel with them, because he raised them from little eggs until they became big eggs, until they became full-grown turkeys. But he would wander with them in the woods. And before that, he was never able to walk in the woods without such an acceptance by other animals. So he would be with the turkeys walking, and the deer would not run away. And he'd experience different things. But he said the turkeys would see something, and they'd already know. They'd already know, like, a snake is bad, and a tree's okay. But he said that, and I got to remember this specifically, but it had to do with a tree, that there had been a tree in a spot for a long time, and it was knocked down. And now the turkeys came to that spot, and the tree wasn't there, and they seemed to know something was different about the area, although they had never been to the area before. So even like the map of the woods was somehow incorporated within them. I mean, think of birds, how quickly they learn to fly.
Like, and also the boy, when we see the eagle and the small bird, how know this is eating him, you know, versus the other birds is normal. So
what birds do you have to avoid, and which ones do you not have to avoid? How do they know that?
So what happened the second experiment?
Let's keep going with that. Pups separated from the mothers showed increased stress responses and altered DNA methylation patterns, which were passed on to subsequent generations. So there is physical differences within the patterns of their DNA based upon the stress of being separated from their mothers. And then that stayed within them. So they had this trauma from separation. Human examples of this are things such as PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder, depression, chemical DNA gene changes, human passed on traits, and Holocaust survivors that not only have had their own DNA changed in this epigenetic sense, but even offspring of them retained some of those same changes. And these are some of the experiments. Let's see what we have here. So individuals with PTSD exhibit changes in DNA methylation in genes relating to stress response and neuroplasticity, which have been seen to be passed on to their offspring as well. Depression, epigenetic modifications such as altered DNA methylation and histone acetylation have been linked to the development of depression. What else do we have here? We have chemical DNA changes. Exposure to toxins and stress can lead to chemical modifications of DNA, affecting gene expression and contributing to mental health disorders. Human passed on traits, stress susceptibility, coping mechanisms can be influenced by parental experiences and transmitted to offspring as well. This is where some of our behavioral traits come from, and maybe our personality. And descendants of the Holocaust survivors exhibit epigenetic changes in genes associated with stress and PTSD. So these, what was that word called? They were persistent. Their changes can be adaptive, but they can be persistent, or they can go away as well. And there's certain things that can be done to minimize long-term effect in some situations, and in others, there's not much that can be done. So are these reversible is the question. You know, and some are, and some are less persistent, and some are highly persistent. So we can look at that. So one of the things that we wanted to talk about real quick was that one of the big challenges of society, wherever, whatever country, is major depressive disorder, that it impacts lives tremendously. You can have heritability of major depressive disorder. We're going to talk about factors leading to epigenetic modifications and then epigenetic mechanisms that are related to MDD or major depressive disorder. So what is it? What is major depressive disorder? So what is major depressive disorder? It's a chronic, episodic, and debilitating mental health condition characterized by persistent low mood, psychomotor retardation, agitation, cognitive impairment, physical symptoms like changes in appetite, and sleep patterns. It can impact various aspects of our life. It can impact education, employment, relationships. It can lead to premature mortality. It can be depressive and anxiety disorders, or can be promoting.
How do people know they have this kind of issue? Because maybe feel, oh, it's just a stress what I have, but how know?
I guess it's the point is that we talked about the first slide on this is it's chronic, episodic, and debilitating. Mm-hmm. So these are the three things that make it the major, or should I say, major depressive disorder is when it's chronic. You really can't really get rid of it. Episodic, there are these episodes that are repetitive, and debilitating, it stops you from being able to do things. So I believe that's the definition that leads to it being major depressive disorder versus just, oh, I have anxiety. Because with anxiety, maybe you can deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
Where this you're not able to. And let's look at some of the ways it impacts education. Impair cognitive function, concentration, motivation, leading to academic difficulties and lower educational attainment. In employment, people can often experience reduced productivity, higher absenteeism, increased risk of unemployment. Again, disruptive and debilitating. Relationships. There you go. Strain relationships with family, friends, and partners due to mood instability, withdrawal, and communication difficulties. Premature mortality associated with increased risk of suicide and other diseases leading to premature mortality. So I'm popping out of that for a moment, is that it's not only that you're depressed and there's suicidal thoughts, but just because you feel this way, your chemistry's changed, other diseases can pop up that normally wouldn't be there.
Your immune system is low and then everything can happen.
It does. So the heritability of major depressive disorder is about 30-40%, indicating that genetics alone do not account for most of the risk. Environmental factors also play a significant role.
Mm-hmm.
However, if you have depression in your family, that's a higher percent likelihood that you would have depression, your major depression disorder, but it doesn't mean you're going to have it.
Yeah.
So when we talk about other factors, nutrition, exercise, diet, sleep, all these things play an important part.
And the lottery and the DNA too.
Yes. So we have some childhood and adult examples of what can lead to epigenetic modifications and changes. And when we come back on 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim,
we'll talk about them.
Tired of attracting the wrong type of guy, it was time to give something else a try. She got her computer and started to plan and created a process to find her man. Soon she went on a perfect date. And then she knew it must be fate. In just 90 days, that is all it took. How she found her match? It is in the book.
90 Day Soulmate is brought to you by 90 Day Solutions. Welcome back to Lizette and Jim. What show is this?
Hold on. 90 Day Soulmate.
Welcome back to 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
Today we're talking about inherited trauma.
Mm-hmm.
How we may inherit trauma from our ancestors and maybe what we can do about it. Let's look at some of the things that can impact children, all right? So let's go to the childhood examples of things that can impact trauma. Abuse and neglect. Early life stress can lead to lasting epigenetic changes that predispose individuals to major depressive disorder. Parental depression. Children of depressed parents are more likely to develop MDD due to both genetic and epigenetic factors. So one is having the abuse and neglect in your life, but also coming from parents that have had the challenges in their life.
Mm-hmm.
So recognizing that is very important. Adult examples. Chronic stress, persistent stress can alter DNA methylation patterns, contributing to the development of MDD. Traumatic events, trauma in adulthood can lead to epigenetic changes associated with increased risk of major depressive disorder. We talked about the DNA methylation last week. There's all these chemical things related. We're going to avoid that right now, and I think we're going to try to get into recognizing, how about biological? This is the important part. There's so many important parts. But epigenetic DNA modification, It can be looked at. So somebody who can look at DNA and be able to see what's going on there, you can recognize some of the factors that may impact the likelihood that you have these challenges. It can then also look at the likelihood that different therapies may work. And so let's look at that real quick, that it can help. The biological markers that are there can also lead to potential treatments. Diagnosis, predicting responses of various chemicals and treatments, as well as interfering with epigenetic mechanisms, meaning will a drug or a therapy interfere with a potential epigenetic mechanism, making it impotent, making it innocuous, making it not impactful.
Okay.
So let's look at some of those things. Diagnosis. Epigenetic markers can aid in the diagnosis of MDD by identifying special modifications associated with the disorder. So you actually have genetic markers that may be associated with major depressive disorder. What else do we have there? That epigenetic profiles can help predict individual responses to treatments, allowing for personalized approaches. And targeting epigenetic mechanisms with drugs or lifestyle changes can potentially reverse harmful modifications and alleviate symptoms. There's other things that they say is that lifestyle changes and drugs may actually reverse. Mm-hmm. So they may reverse the methylation under remethylation or demethylation of the gene and, quote, shut off the expression.
Okay.
So maybe it changes your life, and then it's not passed on.
So you know, keep going with your generation.
It's reprogramming. So this is like an actual.
It has to do before you have a baby.
Yes. Yeah. Before the baby. What else do we have on this? Typical examples. We talk about here's typical examples of some passed on traits. Stress response, anxiety disorders, metabolic disorders are passed on. Stress response, root cause is parental exposure to stress, can lead to changes in the offspring's stress response mechanisms. In anxiety disorders, the root cause is epigenetic changes due to maternal stress during pregnancy can increase the risk of anxiety disorders in children. So please keep pregnant women under less stress. And then metabolic disorders, poor nutrition can lead to epigenetic changes affecting metabolism. Wow. Poor parental nutrition can lead to epigenetic changes affecting metabolism in offspring. Gotta hit the right buttons over here, huh? That's the wrong one there. Let's go over here. We gotta skip all that. We can get to the end here, I guess. All right. Wanna do this? Ready?
Very.
So with all these epigenetic changes that we have that we can pass on or that we inherited, that include trauma that's passed on because of the methylation of part of our DNA, which causes gene expression and causes our personality, creates triggers, creates reactivity, creates physical as well as mental issues.
Behaviors.
Yeah. What can we do? Are we just victims?
Maybe.
There's certain things we can do. So let's look at some of the takeaways of this whole presentation we had today. How to overcome and change outcomes. Number one, implementing strategies to recognize and modify harmful epigenetic patterns can improve mental health outcomes. Recognizing trauma and behavioral patterns is the first step. Identifying signs of trauma and understanding their potential epigenetic roots can aid in addressing and mitigating their effects. Once we understand, here's a potential challenge, we now can think about how we act, interact differently.
Yeah.
How we treat ourselves, how we treat others, what situations we put ourselves in, what we eat, how we take care of ourselves can all be changed. But we have to first recognize that we have trauma.
Yeah. And then one of the cases also this person mentioned in the book is about some couples sometimes feel, and some age, they have a case about a couple that have a 35-year marriage, and then after the child leaves the home, they feel separate. So they start to discover what happened. We were in the family with Mary forever, both parents, and then figure out something in the grandfather or grandmother of one of these and trigger, and they recover in the relationship.
Yeah.
So that's interesting to know if maybe some kind of...
So understanding what's triggering.
Yeah.
What is triggering your feeling, your emotion, what's triggering your response. And and if all you think about is right now I feel a certain way, and then I'm with you, so it must be this, and not looking to your parents, to other situations in your life, to other things that may be causing you to feel this way, and that it's really not the other person or this situation.
Yeah, and trigger in some moment in your life that they are an old couple, and they say, what happened? Why we have to divorce right now? And then they got it. What is the point?
Interesting. And lastly on this, is we were just basically talking about that, is understanding the origin of this trauma and behavioral patterns. By tracing the origins of trauma-related behaviors and epigenetic changes, you can provide insights into effective interventions. I agree with that. That makes sense. You have to trace the origin in order to know what you can do about it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And then typical people don't like to talk that the topic is embarrassed or have a trauma.
Right.
So people avoid trauma. So sometimes you say, oh, my grandmother has abortion, or my grandfather is stolen in the bank or whatever it is. And they is secret in the family and make it something happen and you don't got it. Yeah.
So in a way, like now I'm thinking about AA, right? Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm thinking about family constellation therapy and how maybe being in an environment of people that are also in a situation where they're seeking help may be easier to talk than within your own family. It may be easier to try to look at where this is coming from, the origin, when you're among like-minded people that are also hurt. They're not perfect, and they're looking for healing. And when you're amongst a group of healing people, maybe you can experience, and then going back to family constellation therapy, maybe it's good.
A group of people and share the problem.
So I see there are some similarities there. Let's go into improving outcomes and reversing epigenetic changes. Mentally, we can go to therapy and have cognitive behavioral therapy and other therapeutic approaches which can help modify harmful thought patterns. So let's start working on our thought patterns. Let's actually develop new thought patterns, use our abundance of neuroplasticity, the ability to do that, to create new and better thoughts. Mindfulness practices such as meditation can reduce stress and promote positive epigenetic changes. Physically, we can do exercise, which regular physical activity can positively influence gene expression and mental health. Nutrition, a balanced diet, can support healthy epigenetic patterns. I've been seeing this thing on Instagram everywhere, different people talking about the number one factor in survival of cancer is...
exercise.
Muscle mass.
Yeah.
It's the percent, the balance of muscle you have. Now, part of that might be is you're strong and you can handle the fight. Part of it might be if you're living a healthier lifestyle, it may help you. But the point is if if the indication is that people who are healthier have better chance of survival, then, you know, from a standpoint of physical survival, helping to thwart epigenetic challenges that would be of a physical sort, exercise, nutrition, sleep, no drug use, trying to, you know, keep bad chemicals and toxins out of your life becomes very important. Does it not? It does.
Sure, it's logical.
What else can we do? How about spiritually? Faith and spiritual practices, engaging in spiritual practices can provide emotional support and resilience, reducing anxiety and building resilience. Socially, we can have a support network. Building strong social connections can mitigate the effects of trauma and stress. If you know anybody or you've attended an Alcoholic Anonymous or another group such as that event, you see the social aspect of support and how it can help mitigate the impact of trying to go it alone and being on your own and maybe being depressed. Support of a social nature is so important in dealing with some of these things that maybe are genetic and passed down to us. That being in the boat with others and working together to get to a better place. Finally, in environmental, healthy living conditions, creating a stable and safe living environment can reduce stress and support positive epigenetic changes. Makes sense.
Yeah, so what is your neighbor, your team, your group, the people that you also share, you know?
So it's a healthy living condition is not only the social portion of it, but is it a healthy relationship?
Yeah.
So there are other ways as well to improve the outcomes as well as reverse maybe epigenetic changes. One of them, or two of them, would be situational. Managing stress, developing effective stress management techniques, which can prevent negative epigenetic modifications during situations where you otherwise may become stressed out, full of anxiety, and then when you overstress yourself, maybe you have an epigenetic change. So one is you could stop putting yourself into situations that are harmful to you, avoiding them if you can, or learning different responses to those situations to reduce your anxiety.
And understand the issue, I guess it's important when the people understand, maybe you can treat. If you understand something happened in your life, it's difficult to treat, you know?
That is true. If you don't understand why it happens, you can't treat it. And we talked about this from the beginning here, is once you understand what may be causing the challenges in your relationship, and it might just not be, if you talk about relationship
your life,
that there's all these other things, these extenuating circumstances, and it could be that, you know, I'm going to use the word victim. We are victim of our circumstances until we understand. As soon as I say we are victims, we're no longer victims, because now we know that once we understand we are victims, it's our own responsibility to figure out how to not be a victim.
Yeah.
So you can say, I can't do anything about it, but no, you can. With neuroplasticity, with the ability for the human to rebuild, for us to reverse epigenetic challenges in our life, for us to take care of ourselves healthily, right? In a healthy way, physical way, food way, educational way, build our brains, build our body, build our friendships.
And the spirit.
And the spirit. We can no longer be victim, but we can be victor, right?
Yes.
And finally, in doing so, we can have healthy relationships. We can foster healthy relationships, which can help provide emotional stability and reduce the impact of inherited trauma. One of the reasons that Lizette and I have written 90 Day Soulmate was in order to kind of understand what drew us together, what our families were like. We didn't know that here we are 14 years later, is that what it is? 14 years later, and we're talking about epigenetic things that affect our personalities and our behavior and how that comes from our parents. The book talks about our parents and their behaviors and what we inherited from them. It talks about these things. We didn't know anything about it's in our DNA. We just thought, you know, you get traits passed on. We didn't know how. Now we're understanding how and why, and we hope you are too.
Yeah.
So thank you for listening to another episode of 90 Day Soulmate with Lizette
and Jim.
See you next.
You're listening to 90 Day Soulmate with the relationship engineers, Jim Golnick and Lizette Guevara, only on LA Talk Radio.